This is the Cafe Racer Podcast, episode 57 for June 19th, 2014. I'm Gucci Steve.
And I'm Crash. And your phone vibrates.
And my phone just...
There we go.
Of course.
How's it going, man?
I don't think it would be a show unless we somehow or another screwed that up.
Yeah. Oh. Then there go the dogs. I have no idea what they're barking at.
Yeah.
There they go.
So Lisa put the loudmouth dog away. The other two are allowed to stay out, but Ruby TV's in bed right now. Yeah, there's been a lot of news lately coming out.
Oh, I'm going to go beat my beagle up.
Yeah, don't worry about it.
Toby! All right.
At least you're not making out with the dog.
Yeah, yeah. I'm not Chuck. All right, I'm going to mute this and yell at them. Go ahead, talk.
So Harley-Davidson had a huge announcement today that they're coming out with an electric motorcycle. And there's been...
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah, Project Livewire. And what they're showing right now is a pre-production prototype, but they say, you know, I watched some of the videos about it, and they're saying that it's pretty close to what the final is going to be. Cycle World actually got a first ride on it, and we're going to put a link up in the show notes for that, and there's some cool video on it. And apparently what they're going to do is ride it to 33 different cities and dealerships to debut it.
That's cool.
I haven't really looked at a lot of the specs on it. The bike looks really, really neat. I actually like it a lot.
Yeah, I do too. It kind of reminds me, like, visually of a Diavel a lot.
Yeah, yeah. The especially when you see shots from the rear end on it. We actually have some exclusive. We got an exclusive file. You know, they've got a sound generator on a lot of these electric motorcycles, so that there's some sort of a sound.
Yeah, and I mean, when I used to work security up in Whidbey Island, like you could seriously, like, just if you were looking the wrong way, you wouldn't hear an electric car like a Chevy Volt or something pull up. Like, no idea it's even there. So.
And they've kind of figured this is going to be an issue with motorcycles, for sure.
Yeah, because they're even quieter than the cars rolling. So.
All right, so here's what this thing sounds like. Hopefully we can hear this. Let me turn the gain up.
Yeah.
Right, you ready?
Yeah.
Here we go.
Oh, man. Can you imagine if, like, okay, so if they really do the sound generator thing, like,
they've
I
done
want to
it.
Hack that. I know that some of them have. Like, I want to get in there and change the sound to whatever I want.
I think some people have already done that or talked about being able to do it. Because I would have it. I would at least do that or have it switchable. Switchable would be really cool if you could actually change it. So, like, when you're showing up at the local bike night and it sounds like that, you're perfect. But the sound of this thing that they have in the video, it sounds like a turbine, a jet turbine engine. It sounds really kind of cool. And the guy, you know, it's obviously got some torque and some power. It showed the guy taking off the line and, you know, screeching the rear wheel a little bit. A couple of the specs I heard on the battery life were a little disconcerting, like 58 miles was it for the battery life. But
I'm trying to remember. That doesn't sound that far off. I want to say Zero's, like, absolute biggest one is, like, 80 miles.
Well, I mean, if you get in that 100-mile range, it'd be cool for, you know... maybe a weekend ride, but and I don't know if this is going to be one of these things where they'll have places where you're going to be able to, like, charge up, you know.
Okay, so I spoke out of turn. I guess Zero's maximum range bike is 171 miles. So I mean that's in the city. I mean, because they do get better range at lower speed, so...
That's more than a V-Max? That's more than...
That's more than my motorcycle. Well,
some of the peanut tank Harley-Davidson's, right? What's a peanut tank Harley-Davidson get for range? 100, maybe?
I want to say 120, 130, maybe, because if you figure about... They're probably about 45 miles to the gallon, and they've got a 3.3-gallon tank, so maybe 150 miles.
Interesting thing was when this, when the story broke and Harley-Davidson had published on, you know, a video on YouTube and they showed a link to a website. When I went to that website all this morning, it was giving an error. And I'm going to check it right now and see where it goes to.
So just as a sort of a baseline, the Zero SR, which is their, they call it their Street Fighter. It's kind of their sportier, one of their longest distance models. The 2014 Zero SR highway 75 at 70 miles an hour has got an 88 mile range, and then city only is up to 171. So I mean, yeah, that is
city only 171 highway 88.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I mean, I guess it, depending on whether Harley's quoting that number as a highway number or a city number. I'm going to guess they're probably quoting the highest number they could get out of it, which is, that's pretty low. now that we talk about that, is it, if it's, you know, only 58 miles or whatever.
Okay, Harley-Davidson's website, project.harley/davidson.com, is now working for the Project Livewire.
Well, that's good.
Let me just see if it tells you where they're going to be, because it says the Experience Tour. New York is the first one, June 24th and 25th.
Yeah.
And then it looks like Milwaukee, Boston. I'm going to see if there's anything around here. Philly. So they're only showing four right now. So I'm going to keep an eye on this. And if there's anything that comes anywhere close, I'd love to go see this thing. I'll tell you what, I don't know how...
If you see L.A. on that list at any point, let me know.
Okay.
I probably forget to look at it.
Well, I'm gonna
yeah.
Have them, I'm gonna sign us up to get the updates. But
cool,
you know, and I've seen a couple. I've been watching the news kind of come out today. You know, in the motorcycle community, and listening to people talk about it. And yeah, I'm not really sure how the Harley Eastas are gonna take this. You know.
Yeah, but then again, I mean, they hated the V-Rod too.
Exactly,
and the XR.
Right. So this.
And they probably don't like the streets either.
Yeah. I'm excited. I'm excited to see this thing. I think the bike looks really neat. I think they're moving in the right direction. You know, I electric motorcycles are going to be the future for a lot of people, especially people that, you know, are really sensitive to the environment. They don't want any fossil fuel powered vehicles. And this, if as this proliferation of electric vehicles comes about, I think you're going to start seeing alternative fueling sites. I don't know how quick they can do this, a charge, you know?
Yeah, I don't know.
Certainly, if you're at work, maybe, and there's a station outside that you could charge at work.
Yeah, I'll tell you what. I mean, I've got just the other day, because I've got a guy that works with me that's way, way into electric vehicles. Like, he's looking at buying, because, I mean, this is one of the guys, he's looking at buying a Honda Del Sol that's been converted to an electric vehicle. But anyway, so... He talks about them a lot. I've looked into them a lot. I've ridden some of the older, the 2011, I think, Zeros. And if I could afford to buy an electric motorcycle right now to commute on, I would absolutely do it.
What'd you think of the Zero?
It felt fine. I mean, it didn't. It was an 11, so they've made some pretty significant changes since then.
Right.
I'm sure they're better now, and I didn't really have any problems with it at the time. But, you know, it felt kind of, it was kind of hard to describe because there's no gear shifting on the Zero. It's just all throttle, you know. So it kind of had a scooter sort of feel to it where, you know, it's just, you know, you're just constantly holding the throttle down.
Right.
But I got it up to 70 miles an hour and rode, you know, for a couple minutes like that, and it was fine. I couldn't come up with any reason to complain about it. I wasn't expecting it to be super powerful.
And you know, at that range too, for the highway range, I could easily commute on that bike. I could, because my commute's, you know, like anywhere between 130 to 150 miles, depending on if I do a stop someplace else, but easily commute.
I've only got like a 30-mile round trip commute. Like you're actually pretty far on the high end of the commute distance for the average person.
Well, that's just because I choose to be living
Yeah.
You know, northern Palm Beach County in a rural area. Doing some reading on this today and listening to some interviews that they had on Cycle World, the bike, they're not saying that they're going to actually make this motorcycle yet. This is kind of an engineering test and to see what the motorcycle community thinks of it.
Yeah, I think they're doing a little barnstorming.
Yeah. I actually think they're going to get a lot of positive feedback from people other than the normal Harley buyer, and this might open up a new market for them, you know?
I hope so.
You know what I didn't really check today? To see what their stock did, which is going to be interesting.
Oh, yeah, that's a good point. Like,
I'm a Harley Davidson stockholder. Let me see.
I see you've got your Harley Davidson shirt on as well.
Yeah, that was just... So I went up today.
I've got a Backfire Moto shirt on from Backfire Moto in Seattle.
The stock went up, and let's see what it traded at today. Yeah, it traded pretty decent. It you know, so it did have the news came out on their press release for the market today too on USA Today, which is good. AP, Bloomberg all carried the story. Wall Street Journal, and Gadget.
So, speaking of Harley, did you see that there's a video floating around of a guy a Harley rider who confronts this news camera guy? Have you seen it at all?
Okay. No, where was that?
I'll find it and I'll explain it while I do it. So it's one of these local news channels that they kind of do one of those hold on, I can't type and talk at the same time. All right, now that I've done that. Wow. Figures, I can't find it. Maybe it's just in my Facebook feed. I can find it there. Anyway, so this guy, this news guy, he goes out and he kind of like films. It's in San Francisco. He films people doing dumb stuff on the road. You know, it's one of those like, you know, are you kidding kind of segments where the guy's like, really, this, you know, he's going to be this dumb and do this stupid thing. Like,
right.
It's kind of a little fluff piece for this news channel. And he films this Harley rider going the wrong way down an exit ramp to get into a parking lot. And the Harley rider walks like he parked.
Lost your audio, Chris. Now you're good. You were dead
for a
second. Yeah.
No, that's weird. Anyway, so this Harley rider, so he goes the wrong way down an exit.
You're cutting out back and forth. You keep losing your audio.
Am I here now?
You're there now, but it's something switching off and on. It's kind of strange.
Not that I'm aware of.
All right,
I'm going to paste this into the chat, and I'm going to stop touching my computer. All right. Am I here?
Yeah, you're still there.
Okay, so the video, the link I pasted in the chat, Harley rider goes the wrong way down an off-ramp. It's a really short off-ramp, but he goes the wrong way down this off-ramp to park in this parking lot for whatever reason and walks over and starts yelling at the cameraman for like, you know, you're putting cameras in people's face, you can't do that without my permission, whatever. And the guy's like, you came over here. I didn't put my camera in anybody's face. You drove by, and then you decided to walk over here and yell at me. So anyway, they go back and forth for a little bit, and I guess, I don't know if somebody else called the cops or if the cops just saw it or something, but when he got back over to his bike, the cops were waiting for him, and he got hit with going the wrong way down the intersection because the reporter was like, oh yeah, I got him on video going the wrong way down the intersection. he got hit, or, you know, down the off-ramp, got hit with that. Driving on a suspended license, and then
so
like
he was a dirtbag to begin with, basically.
Yeah. And the it was just kind of a funny. Like it has not. I'm not, you know, casting aspersions on Harley people.
Yeah.
This people, he just happened to be on a Harley, and he was just being a freaking moron.
So to rat hole a little bit as usual.
Hey, why not?
Huh?
I said, hey, why not?
Yeah, why not? there was a related story talking about what he was accusing the reporter of doing. Just so the listeners kind of know, if you're out in public and somebody's videotaping you or taking pictures of you, they're allowed to. You have no expectation of privacy when you're in a public place. You can probably ask them to stop, but there was a photographer that was arrested recently. He was a freelance news photographer, and I can't remember where it was. It might have been in Milwaukee somewhere. I saw the Photo District News online ran this story yesterday, and the guy was arrested. They took his camera, confiscated his gear because he was videotaping an arrest scene, and the police officer told him to leave, and he said, well, where would you like me to stand where I can do this? And he says, nowhere. You can't do it. So the guy moved like a block away to try to get out of the way of people, continued to videotape, and they arrested him. And they just settled for $200,000, the police department. Now, they're not going to admit any wrongdoing, but they can't do that. And, you know, so if you're going to do dumb stuff out there, and people, especially some news guy from the local station looking for people doing dumb stuff, you're going to get busted doing it. And people seem to think that somebody can tell you, you can't take my picture or you can't photograph this building in a public place. That's not how it works.
Yeah.
If it's in the public, it's fair game. Yeah, it might be rude.
Or a public thing.
Yeah. Anyway, so back to talking about Harley-Davidson and Project Livewire, the streets. I made a couple calls to see if there were any in the local dealership. And so far, a couple of my local dealers down here haven't taken delivery yet. They're here. I'm going to put some links out also on the show notes for some specs on both the motorcycles, some in-depth specs that I found on them.
Yeah, I don't know if listeners, if you listen to the Pace, they were at Americade, the street was, and
I heard James talk about that.
From the Pace got to see one. He didn't get to ride one, but he got to see one up close.
I didn't catch why he didn't get to ride it. They weren't given demo rides, or they were all full?
I believe that's the case. I believe they weren't giving demo rides of that one.
The websites now schedule a demo ride for each of them for the local dealership, their websites. So I've got calls into them, and I've actually asked them, hey, would you mind if I brought a video camera, and we'll do a little on-camera interview and talk about it. I'm really curious to see, you know, when the Bolt came out, I think Yamaha was really smart in doing things like they did at the AIM Expo where they had a builders competition. Mm-hmm. So you had, you know, Greg Hagman and Jesse Rook and all these guys doing these different versions of the Bolt. And the really interesting thing about the Bolt is you can actually go in the dealership, buy the bike, and get all these accessory parts put on the bike like you can for, you know, any of the Harleys right now.
Right.
And I'm curious to see if there's going to be other configurations of the street so that when it rolls out of the dealership, it's going to look like a cafe racer or maybe a touring version, something like that. So,
yeah, I think, that'd be cool.
You know, and again, and I think if Harley-Davidson was smart, they really wouldn't market to their existing base. Let me rephrase that. They wouldn't eliminate them because I think there might be some people within their existing customer base where their current models might be too big for them or a little intimidating, and you might get, you know, maybe a guy that's got a Dyna or something and his wife wants her own bike and she's, you know, 5 foot tall and any of their bikes were maybe too big for her. So that 500cc street might be perfect for her without her having to go get, you know, a smaller statured or smaller cc Japanese bike. Now she can feel right at home. You know, with the crowd that they ride with, having Harley-Davidson.
Yeah, I'm also thinking the street probably, I mean, it's definitely, you know, from what everyone has said, is it's quite a bit smaller than the Sportster. And, I mean, the Sportster had been the sort of go-to, air quotes, ladies bike in Harley's lineup before, but that thing is super top-heavy. Like,
you think even the low, to like the smaller Sportsters as well?
Yeah, it's, I mean, from what I hear, the streets are quite small. And I mean, at least they probably carry their weight lower too than the Sporty does.
Well, I'm interested to see what they look like. You know, it's hard for me to tell looking at pictures online because I thought the Grom was a lot bigger than it actually was until, because, you know, you watch the video and the guy that's on there is probably a jockey size, because when
right.
I actually saw it, I'm like, that's a mini bike. You know, that thing's tiny.
Yeah.
We'll see. I'm really kind of excited about them having this little bit of a departure from the norm, and mm-hmm. We'll see what happens. So the next thing is that is looks like it's really going to be done, and there's some photographs floating around of it, is the Ducati Scrambler, too.
Yeah. No, go ahead.
Did you read the current story about it that's been going on about how they did the release?
No, I haven't read it. I saw some pictures the other day of like the thing getting released or whatever, and then
yeah, apparently they showed us.
I watched the video. That's what I did.
You saw the video, right?
Yeah.
Apparently they did they revealed the prototype to the employees in Bologna. And there, apparently the only official picture is like a silhouette of it, but there's a bunch of pictures floating around. I'm going to throw a link up from Ducati Motorcycles of Tampa, and they've got some pictures on there. And if that's actually what it looks like, I'll send you the link for this.
Okay.
Man, that's a really cool-looking bike. It's kind of like the tank is kind of old school on it, and they've got the old school badging.
Yeah.
On there, and the seat looks really neat. The pipes are really high. I'll send you this link right now, but we'll put this up.
I just clicked on it from the show notes.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. I think I saw a similar leaked picture of this before.
See, I'm not sure if this is real.
Yeah, I don't.
To me, it looks Photoshop, but
I think that is a Photoshop job, but it might be a, concept of what, they were kind of going for or whatever. But that would be cool for sure. Like, I'd love it if they did something that style.
They got two different – I just noticed this now that the images are slightly different with the trellis frame and the seat.
And the swing arm and stuff.
Yeah. This is a really cool bike. This is something that I'd like. And I've always kind of liked the whole scrambler look, and lately on Bike EXIF, there's been a bunch of scrambler builds on there, and the scrambler's always kind of been something like your bike with knobbies on it, I thought was really neat. So in the one that Triumph makes,
the Triumph Scrambler,
yeah, it's kind of, to me, I think that bike could be perfect in like a 500cc, or something that size. Having that the big motor in it kind of defeats the purpose. Are they saying what this bike's going to come in at CC wise? Uh-huh.
I don't think so. But yeah, the
750, I agree with you maybe.
I agree with you about the Triumph would be really cool if it were smaller. I think it looks really awesome. But yeah, 500 CCs or so, like a nice light 500 CC engine.
Yeah,
that'd be really cool. You know who needs a scrambler, Ben? Royal Enfield.
Well,
they've got that 535 single.
That brings up a good point, because now that I've had the chance, two of the guys that hang out at the gas station at Club Show bought Royal Enfields, and one of them was a huge surprise to me because it's the guy that I bought the 10A from. Did I tell you the story about Bill, the guy that I bought the 10A from?
I think so, but I'm...
And we've talked about this in the past. That bike's relatively rare. They only made 170 of them. So when I bought the bike from my friend Bill, he had that bike and three other bikes at the time. He had a GS 1200, and he had one of the smaller GSs, the 800 or 700 or whatever flavor it is. And he had a Boxer Cup replica, which is also a really cool bike.
Yeah.
But he kept saying, well, I want to sell one of these because the Boxer Cup and the 10A are kind of the same, it's the same flavor of V-twin, and I'd love to have them both. Well, the bike originally was purchased by another guy that we ride with, his brother, so we know the history of the bike and where it came from. Well, he started to jones about selling it, and he's been bugging me about buying it back, because if you want to sell it, I'll buy it back. What happened to... I'm always doing these search for 10A on Craigslist and eBay looking for parts and stuff, or even like, the die-cast models or anything I can find that's related to it. Maybe an original ad for the thing. Well, I found one, strange enough, on Craigslist for sale in Florida, in Clearwater, that had low miles, like 2,000 miles on it, and the guy was basically giving it away. And I know what some of these things have sold for in other parts of the country, and I think Alex McKenzie told me that Ewan McGregor, I think they paid like 10 grand for his, but Bill found it. I called him and I gave him the information. He went and bought the bike. So he has it. So now at the gas station, there's two 10As sitting there. When I got back from the trip, he pulls up on it and he goes, "You hear what I bought?" I'm like, "No." He goes, "I bought that Royal Enfield, the Continental GT." I'm like, "You're kidding." He's like, "No." I go, "Did you get rid of everything?" He's like, "No, I just went, it was cheap enough. I went and bought it." And there's another guy that's got a Ducati Diavel at the gas station that has one as well. And he's offered me a ride on his. So, yeah. And I know Bill would let me ride it too, but he's out on a trip. I just haven't been able to schedule this because of the weather we've been having in the rain, but I'm definitely going to get a ride on one. I'm going to video it. We'll talk about it. So now that I've actually sat and looked at the bike and talked about it more and heard, I think that bike would lend itself really well to a conversion. And I don't think it's a stretch to think that Royal Enfield might not offer the parts for that. That it looks like you could very easily convert it to a high pipe and put different tires on it and change the bars. Well, let me take that back. They're clip-ons. So you'd have to
You need a new top tree, but that's not totally...
Another triple tree, yeah.
Yeah, that's not totally crazy, though. I mean, because they make... for a long time, Triumph Thruxtons came with clip-ons. The new ones don't. They come with low handlebars.
Bars, yeah.
Yeah, but they came with clip-ons for a long time, and LSL and a couple other companies made conversion top clamps for the Thruxton that had handlebar clamps built into them. So, I mean, it's not... And you can get one-off top triples from machine shops. Like, it's not crazy. It's totally a doable thing.
So I don't know. That or they'll come out with a different version of it. I mean, they made enough versions of the Bullet, you know, so maybe this bike will have another version. I just heard the thing run and watched the guy start it, and I'm like, man, this thing is cool, you know. And again, for the price, I know I keep beating this dead horse about what I think that bike, what a great deal it is. I want to ride it, and I'll let you know what it's like to ride it. So,
yeah. Does that have a kick? I don't remember. Is it a kickstart?
It's got both, electric and kick. So if you want to look cool to your friends, kicking it over, it's got it on there. Yeah. You know, maybe next year they'll come out with some different versions of it. I think a chrome tank version would be kind of neat, too.
Yeah. What you got to do is you got to, like, get it started up with the electric starter and, like, sort of warmed up a little bit and then kill it right before your friends come over.
Right.
So it's nice and it kicks right over.
I don't really know how hard it would be to start, actually. I mean, that's one of the things I want to try. I'm going to set up the camera and kickstart it and see how it is kickstarting it. And, you know,
I think the only single I've ever kickstarted was like a 125 or something, or 250.
Well, I had a Mako 490 Sand Spider that I had used to have to kickstart, and that was kind of a little bit of a bear, but that was a long time ago, you know. And I think there was a compression release on it, too, now that I can think back. But,
yeah, well, I mean, Royal Enfield looked like they were not trying to do that thing that Yamaha did where, you know, Royal Enfield said, all right, we're going to take this really cool-looking, old-looking bike and put some new key features on it, whereas Yamaha was like, all right, we're going to take this old piece of crap that we've been stamping out of steel for the last 40 years, and we're just going to do it exactly the same. So with this, you know, draconian kickstart procedure.
There's not a whole lot about that bike that I like, to be honest with you. I don't like the way it looks. Yeah.
I do.
You do, really?
I do, yeah.
Yeah, I don't. I don't know. Look, it's too much UJM for me. You know, I guess that's just personal, really. You know, and I kind of like, which is strange coming from me because of the crap that I do like, but and I got pretty eclectic taste. I don't know. There's just something about that bike that...
I like the long, skinny tank.
Do you really?
Yeah. I don't know why. I just kind of like that line of the seat and the tank being really close to the same level, similar to that concept photo of the Ducati Scrambler where it's really all just kind of flat across the top.
Yeah, there's just so much about the Scrambler that works better than it does with, you know...
I mean, this is
maybe once I saw the bike in person, it'd be a different story.
Yeah, but this is also coming from the guy whose Bonneville has. I have the fuel injected Bonneville, which has the more of a hump tank than the non fuel injected Bonneville. So, like, even my motorcycle goes the opposite direction of what I just described. So,
Have you actually seen one of the? Have you been to a dealership lately? Are the SR400s out?
I haven't been to it. Let's see. I'm trying to think if I've been to a dealership that sells Yamaha in a long time.
I'll have to stop by
I
the local
one. I can't think of one. The last Yamaha that I was within, like, you know, touching or riding distance of was Gary LaPlante's school that I took up in Anza, California. And that was all dirt bikes.
Were those 125s?
I was on a 250, the WR250. I don't remember what letter comes after it, but not the dual sport one, the off-road mm-hmm. one. And they're completely different bikes, by the way. Which
yeah,
I think
a buddy of mine just bought the dual sport version of that bike.
Irritating. Yeah, the dual sport, like if you... there, it's like one's a WR250R and the other one's a WR250F or something.
Mm-hmm.
And the off-road one and the dual sport one are like tire to handlebars to tail, like completely different, 100%. Even the engines are different.
They, does not Suzuki also have something like that too, where there's two bikes that, well, that the 400.
The DRZ 400 and the 400, or the 400S and the SM are
pretty close for the most part though. Right.
Close. I mean, it's like suspension and swing
wheels.
Arm. And
the
wheel.
Swing arm's different too?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I only know that because a friend of mine has one of the SMs or had an SM.
Yeah, that's the bike I rode last year at AM. I didn't really care for it, and I think it was probably just because it was really, really undersprung, you know, for me.
Yeah.
And it just seemed, it seemed tiny. You know, usually, typically where like a 400cc dirt bike feels huge underneath you, this thing felt really tiny. And I guess it had to do with the, you know, the size of the wheel. I mean, it was a fun bike to ride. I think I would have rather had the off-road version of it.
Mm-hmm.
At least tried to ride that one. Speaking of AIM, it's coming up in October. I'm sure we'll talk a few more times about that. We have some really interesting announcements coming out that I'm not going to talk about right now, but it's in regards to, you know, the Cafe Racer community and AIM Expo.
Mm-hmm.
And just keep in mind, AIM Expo is the same time as Biketoberfest. It's the same weekend, which I think they're going to try to do something to coincide. But we're going to have a guest possibly on the next show to talk about it.
Oh, cool.
It'll be interesting. So stay this tuned for that.
This is actually news to me, everyone.
Did you not see an email I sent you about that?
I probably just haven't read it yet.
Okay. I sent you some information about it, but I keep getting updates, you know, because I registered as press for the expo. I get all the updates throughout the year on who has re-signed, and it should be bigger than it was last year. I know they've cut the days down back a little bit. They just had a lot, but it looks like there's going to be more people showing,
cool.
So that should be interesting. The demo rides hopefully will be a lot better, and I'm hoping that Honda will show because they were absent.
I was thinking because, like, this year, obviously, I don't have leave days to be able to make it out there, but I could conceivably try to plan something for trying to come out there next year. Because I really want to come out to, you know, the East Coast again.
Well, you know, you got a place to stay. So
well, that's handy.
Yeah, that'd be easy. And there's bikes here too. So we either ride from here or we can trailer some stuff up and you know, kind of hit Daytona as well. But
yeah.
And that's what I'm kind of contemplating based on what this event's going to be. That I don't want to talk about right now, but I may ride up there or trailer the bike up and then do the particular event. I know I'm being really cryptic about this, but
that's okay.
We're going to have somebody come on and talk about it.
So do you have any fun rides planned in the near future?
There's a possibility that, in a remote possibility, that I might be going to the Overland Expo East in October, but it's really kind of tight schedule. The expo is the week before the AIM Expo, and I don't know. I'm going to see Michael probably in July. I'm going to go up to Asheville in July, and I'm planning on maybe my wife and I and him and his wife having dinner or going to their house, but we'll talk about it when I go there. It's not really... You know, I mean, I went to the one with you, and it was a really great time, and this isn't critical that I go to this other one. I mean, I'd like to if I had the time, even if it was
right.
Just for the weekend. But that, and I've been doing – I did a – I took the Stelvio on off-road last weekend for Father's Day. Lisa's like, hey, go ahead and take a day. It's your day. And the kids were working, the boys. So I went out to this place called J.W. Corbett, which is a wildlife management area out here. And it was really, really wet. So I haven't been out in Corbett since I was a kid. We used to hunt out there. And I went in the gate and went into the place. And I'm like, oh, it's a paved road, you know. This isn't bad. And then the paved road just got really ruddy. And then all of a sudden it turned into like dirt. And then it turned into like kind of mud. And I got to this one spot where you made this sharp turn. And I see a couple Jeeps sitting there. And one of them's got the hood up. And I happened to stop and, you know, ask the guys, hey, do you need any help? And the guy that was underneath the hood of the Jeep, you could tell this guy was probably a little bit older, in his 30s or 40s, and there was some young guys with him. And he goes, hey, guys, this bike, you're never going to see this bike. It's really kind of rare. And I look at the guy, he looks at me, and I'm like, Dave? And it turns out it's this guy, Mambo Dave, from the ADV site that we've ridden a bunch together, like,
nice.
Down the canal road. Yeah. And he had bought a Jeep, and he was out there four-wheeling. So we talked a little bit, and I said I would follow him. You know, they were going to follow me out. Well, we come to this other turn, and there's one of the game wardens there, and I said, how's the road on the way out? He goes, there's some really big mud puddles coming up. He goes, once you cross those mud puddles, you'll be good to go. And so he's like, look, I'll follow you. If you get stuck, I'll pull you out. But the bike did fine. The puddles were, you know, when he said tire deep, Dave was thinking like four-wheel drive tire deep, like 4 feet. No, it was like, you know, 4 or 5 inches of mud, but it was really kind of wet, gooey, and pretty big. Yeah. And went through it, and the bike was covered and stuff. And it was fun, though. Like, coming out, the last few miles of the exit row were probably the worst because it was like wet Florida sand, you know, so it looks like it's hard packed, but when you get in it, it's really gooey and slippery. And then I just had to stand on the pegs and let the bike move underneath me to get all the way out of there. But it was fun. Other than that, you know, it's been really raining here a lot, so I haven't really even commuted to work. I was going to ride this morning, and I looked at the radar, and it was just thunderstorms in this afternoon. It's been really bad, yeah.
This week, with the wife out of town, I'm not able to ride, obviously, because I've got anywhere I go, the 2.5-year-old has to come. So
you can't. There's no
real riding.
He wouldn't fit in a tank bag, by any chance? No.
He would definitely fit in the bag that, like, in one of my saddlebags.
Just put some goggles on him and let him hold on, you know, and you'd be good to go.
He would be so stoked. Like, he loves motorcycles, but. In a couple of weeks, I'm actually riding up to Salt Lake City.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's going to be cool.
The annual gathering of fans of the Frog Pants Network of podcasts that I went to last year and the year before. I'm going again this year. Only this time, I'll be staying with the world-famous Chuck of the Wheel Nerds.
Do you want to try? When are you going to do this now?
The weekend of the 4th of July.
I'll be in Asheville then. Okay.
Yeah.
So you got to record something with Chuck. He's just.
We probably will. I'm not sure whether we'll do like a quick. Whatever we do, I'll make sure it goes up on our feed too.
Okay, so I'm looking at the list, not to change the subject again, but I finally got the list for AM Expo up, and it's pretty extensive, but I don't see Honda yet. I do see ACF 50. You know, Lear Chemicals. You always hear the guys at Cleveland Moto talking about ACF 50, and they're going to be there. So, you know, and a lot of these names won't be familiar to the listeners because they're OEM manufacturers to the industry.
Yeah.
So there's like companies here that manufacture pistons and hard parts and things like that that go into motors. But
just like Wiseco on the list and stuff like
that. Yeah, there's a lot of Korean battery manufacturers there. But, you know, Brembo I'm looking at. There's Clearwater Lights, which is an ADV. Cruise Tools is going to be there. I'm just kind of running through this list a little bit. EarthX Batteries, EBR, again, EBC Brakes, Galfer, let's see.
I just ordered a whole bunch of brake stuff for the Bonneville, actually.
Yeah, I got to do the brakes on the Stelvio too.
I was able to score a not an awesome deal, but they're really hard to find, so I took it anyway. There's a Honda caliper. It's a 3-piston caliper that'll fit on a Bonneville's brake rotor and mounts up. You know, the fork bracket, like the bracket for the forks, everything just mounts right up. And they're hard to find because they're not on really any bikes that have been sold in the U.S. They're all on bikes that were sold overseas. So they only pop up on like U.S. eBay or on the forums every once in a while.
Mm-hmm.
So I found one. Turns out the guy was in L.A. And just because we were too lazy to meet in the middle, he just shipped it to me anyway. But he sent me that. And then I was like, oh, well, if I'm going to have to take this off, I'm going to have to bleed my brakes. And I've always wanted to put that low-profile brake reservoir on, so I'll just go ahead and get that. And I should probably just change my brake lines, too. So I'll go ahead and get those. So, like, basically, I'll have a whole new front brake system, except for the master cylinder.
What low-profile reservoir are you talking about?
British Customs makes one for the Bonneville. It probably would fit other Nissan front brake calipers, or a front brake reservoir, or master cylinders. But basically, I'll find you a link. But it mounts, instead of having the little... urine sample cup, it, and then like a tube that runs to the master cylinder, it just directly mounts to the master cylinder.
I'm looking on their website right now. I like the stuff that British Customs makes a lot. I kind of wish they made stuff for the Gucci. They make some really cool things.
Yeah.
And I like the bikes that they've done too. I've been following some of their stuff on Instagram, and you know, and they've got a really cool tracker. That's what I really like about their. I saw the first time I saw their bikes was at the Triumph tent in at Barber.
Yeah.
There was no one there from British Customs to talk about it.
Link in the chat.
Okay.
Dime City sell. Dime City is a British Customs dealer, and they sell it as well. And they have some other good pictures because it's the that same one is the one that Herm has on his bike. So he has some cool pictures of it.
You know, I also like the stuff that comes from Rizoma as well.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And I kind of like their reservoirs are really neat. They do some nice. Oh, okay. I've actually seen this before.
The only problem with this one is there's no window, so you actually have to open it to check.
Yeah, but I mean, how often do you ever? I don't know. Mine's never really been low.
No, I mean, I figure I just work, taking a look under the cap into like my weekly routine, and then.
Do you have a schedule on when you would replace your fluids?
Triumph says to do it every 2 years.
Okay.
I kind of just keep an eye on it, and it'll be a little more difficult now that I don't have a translucent. Clear-ish right. Reservoir, but I just kind of, when it starts to turn funny colors and I've had it, and I'm like, well, it's been a while, I'll change it.
Well, so they make stuff for the modern bikes, too.
Uh-huh, yeah, British Customs has, like, the whole Triumph. Yeah, the whole Triumph line, really.
Okay. Yeah, I like their bikes. They got nice stuff.
Yeah. So, yeah, I ordered that from them. I actually ordered that from Dime City, because I get a discount, but there's a Do the Ton forum discount if you're out there and you want to order stuff from Dime City Cycles, if you're a member of the Do the Ton forum, there's a discount. 10%. So
there's some stuff coming up in Orlando too, so I'm going to check on that and put some links up for that. And you know, again, if you've got events in your area that you want us to talk about or that we don't know about, we try to, for the most part, keep connected with everybody, but it's kind of impossible for us to know everything. But if you got something coming up, shoot us an email.
Yeah,
you know, for sure. What's our joint? I know we each have individuals, but it's not info@, right? Because I tried that and it doesn't work.
Oh, feedback@caferacerpodcast.com.
Sorry, feedback@caferacerpodcast.com. Send us an email with, and if you got an event coming up or even a bike night that's going to be like a monthly thing, send it to us. We'll put it up. I like Definitely. Doing that. Speaking of bike nights, we had the Vintage Iron Club's monthly bike night, and we got dumped on bad, really, really bad. The ride home was absolutely horrible. It was one of the few times, you know, and I do a lot of riding in the rain, but on the 10A with no ABS and that rear tire wanting to break loose all the time, it was hairy coming back home from that thing. I thought we were going to have a window of opportunity to get home looking at the radar.
Just so your tire was trying to break loose the whole time?
Anytime I leave the light and even try to go normal speed, it seems like it wants to spin on me when I give it a little bit of gas. And the tread's fine on it. I don't know.
On the Stelvio?
No, on the V11, on the 10A.
Oh. What tire is it?
It's a Pirelli, I think. I have to look at it and see. But the throttle on that thing is kind of it's kind of choppy, like it's off or on, you know, that it's not really super smooth.
Yeah.
So a lot of times I might just be giving it a little bit too much gas and I can kind of feel it, you know, wanting to break loose on me in the rain. And, you know, Florida is notorious too for the white that they paint, especially down here in West Palm Beach, the white that they paint on the road where it's the stop area, that stuff gets super slippery. And I know they put stuff in it, an additive to kind of make it gritty, but it wears out after a while. So I'm really cautious about putting my feet down on those things, the lines or the turn arrows, things like that. They're really, really slippery.
Yeah, definitely. I came really close to dumping over the Bonneville recently just because I stepped on like a slightly oily spot on one of those white arrows.
So we actually got a question in the Q&A.
Whoa. Crazy.
Yeah, he wants to know what is the Cafe Racer podcast.
Oh, well, that's a reasonable enough question.
Right. Well, if you've been listening, the guy's name is Husnain Mushtaq. Yeah.
So
it's a show about motorcycles, man. Cafe Racers. Yeah. And you don't necessarily have to have a Cafe Racer or a motorcycle to listen to us.
And we don't necessarily talk about them.
And we don't necessarily even know what we're talking about half the time. So
we do talk about them, but we do talk about everything else as well, imaginable. So real quick, I wanted to give a shout out. I had said when we did the in the Patreon page. By the way, if you're looking for us on Patreon, it's patreon.com/CafeRacerPodcast. I really wanted to give a shout out to all the supporters. There is in work is like a credits list basically that we'll run at the end of the episodes. That's going to have all the names of all the supporters on it. We're just going to do first names. I'm not trying to give out anybody's, you know, private information. So anyway, but that hasn't happened yet. So real quick, since there's not a ton of you, I'd like to personally thank Chris, James, Travis, Robert, and Jim. You guys are awesome, and those of you that are sponsoring at the $5 level, your sticker packs are in work. I got I don't know, Steve, if you saw the text I sent you, a ton of, almost, I got this package from Dime City Cycles that I thought had motorcycle parts in it. It was so heavy, and it was all stickers, because we're mixing in some stickers from our favorite brands, as well as working on getting our own branded sticker. So I got a bunch of stickers from them, some stuff from Revival Cycles, and then some other places that I've gotten stickers from too.
We're definitely working all of our people that have supported us, and we've tried to support that's in the industry to add things to our listener packs for the Patreon support. And same thing, I'm going to echo what Crash said about you guys that have stepped up to help us out. Thank you very much. We're trying to make the show better for you by doing this, so we're going to continue to put time and effort into it to support you guys back for supporting us. And again, thanks.
Yeah.
Speaking of stickers, I got the ones you sent me in the mail. They were really cool.
Yeah. I was thinking, you know, you keep some of your stickers underneath the lid of your side boxes.
Yeah.
I was thinking about pulling my side covers off and like cleaning them up real good because they get all oily. But I was thinking about cleaning them up real good so that I could start sticking the less PG-13 stickers under there.
Yeah, I kind of like having this because when you have the boxes open, people look at them like, oh, that's kind of cool. So I've got a collection of stickers in there. And some of them, they're not really that good for outside, you know, and so I put those up underneath the box as well, too.
Yeah, especially if they're not like a vinyl sticker, if they're a paper sticker, they'll just get wet and get all gross anyway.
There's some cool stuff out there. Like and I'll actually send you some. I forgot to bring them. I was going to give them to you, and I got to send them to you. Is when I did the Distinguished Gentleman's Ride, which I didn't go on because I got sick, but they sent me a sticker pack on that too as well, and there were some pretty neat ones in there that have got the guy that Raleigh, whatever they named the guy for the event. That looked pretty cool. I got to send you some of those. And they came all the way from Australia, believe it or not.
Nice.
Yeah. Another, you know, I just forgot there's another new bike I wanted to talk about too. That's sub $7,000, the FZ07, Yamaha's.
Oh, I've heard about this.
So I'll have the link in the show notes on a first look on this as well. And I like this bike. I like the way it looks. It's kind of, you know, ever since I rode that FZ09 and really had a good time on it, I'm starting to dig these bikes. And this is a twin,
yeah,
where the FZ09 was a triple. There's a version of this in Europe that I think, I got to look it up. I think it's called an MT07, I believe, that is an adventure bike that I don't know if they're going to bring to the States or not.
Hmm.
Yeah, MT07.
It's an adventure bike?
It is a, wait a second, this isn't the same one. Hold on.
Because I know they make a Tenere, like a 600cc Tenere.
No, this isn't the same one. I'm getting this wrong here. 2014 MT07. There's a Roadster, but that's kind of the same looking bike.
Yeah, that's the FZ07.
There's a version of it that they sell overseas that I guess you maybe call it a Scrambler. Maybe it's an AT. Hold on. Nope. My buddy Rob knows about this, and all right, I got to look around for a little bit. But anyway, this the one that the FZ is really kind of cool looking.
Yeah,
I like it a lot.
It looks a lot like the FZ09.
It seems like the tank's a little bit higher than the FZ09, but I could be wrong. It just looks a little different, you know.
Yeah, it's got different lines, definitely, but, you know, like, the headlight is really reminiscent of the 09. Honestly, the headlight looks a lot like there's an LSL headlight that you can buy. They call it, like, their Street Fighter headlight. You can just buy off the rack, and it's really similar shape.
And again, this is, remember we had been talking about that $5,000 to $7,000 price range.
Yeah.
And this is right at the upper end of it, you know, I mean, an affordable bike, decent size, probably makes good power, it's probably fun to ride. I'm hoping they have this at AIM because I'd like to get a demo ride on this. And I think what I'm going to do too is bring the GoPro with me. That way I can get some video footage. Specs listed for claimed wet weight is 397 pounds. Man, that's a light bike.
Yeah.
That is a light bike.
It's like a solid 100 pounds lighter than the Bonneville.
Electronic fuel injection, 11.5:1 compression, 6-speed. You know,
so it's a 700 700 twin water cooled with 11.5:1 compression ratio. So it's probably 75-80 horsepower.
That's what I was thinking. I don't see a published spec on the horsepower right here, but
Yamaha doesn't like to do that for some reason.
I mean, I'm kind of interested to see how this is going to be. This looks like it's a cool bike.
Yeah,
about almost a 3.7 gallon tank. 58 miles to the gallon, they're listing it as. You know, I don't think this is, you know, it's funny because I heard somebody saying, we were talking the other night at the bike night, and someone was saying, you know, these small displacement, medium displacement bikes' popularity is a fad. It's going to go away. I really don't think that's the case. I don't think it's going to go back to, you know, everyone trying to build some sort of a power cruiser. I think that you're still going to see those in the lineups, but I don't think it's – I think these bikes are going to stay. I think people are looking for affordable motorcycles, and I think it's opening it up to a whole new class of riders as well, that first-time bike buyer, you know. Very cool.
Yeah, I mean, it goes in cycles, I think. You know, like you had all those little tiny bikes, and then they got bigger and bigger and bigger, and now they're getting smaller again. So,
well, I know that James had said when he went to Americade that he couldn't get a ride on the Cowie 300 because they were booked up every day.
Yeah.
So the popularity's there.
I do have to laugh, but there's like a spec war going on at the 250 to 300 cc range now.
Yeah, and that doesn't make a lot of, you know, because that bike, the Ninja 250 is a bike that's raced extensively. There's class sports. I don't know if they're going to change that now to fit the 300, and then Honda's going to have the 300. Or, I mean, where does it kind of end? Are they going to just stick right there, or are they going to make that bike now and a 350 next year, and then a 400 after that? Or, you know what I mean? It's just like, at what point do you stop? I thought the 250 was kind of cool, but...
I think 250 or 300 is a nice place to stay. I hope they don't really go any higher than that. I think there's a place for, like, the odd outlier on, like, a 350 or whatever. Like, maybe if KTM came out with a cool 350, like, or that 390 Duke, if they released it over here. You know, something like that. But I do like the idea of that race class 250 or 300.
It's a good class to learn on, you know? And,
absolutely.
Yeah. And the bikes are affordable enough where you're not going to be spending, unless you're buying something that's built, you know, like a Morawaki or something, but most of those bikes are just to go get one off the dealership or buy a used one and get it ready for club racing. I mean, if I wasn't 250 pounds, I'd think about it. But
yeah. And then I'm actually, now that you mentioned racing, I'm curious, because a lot of people race Suzuki GS500s. I'm curious if people are using those Honda 500s, the CBs, very much.
Well, the Ascots are really popular. There was a lot of guys racing Ascots at Barber.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's with a single-cylinder 500 or 550, I think.
But that's pretty old, isn't it? Like.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, like, because you can get new GS500s, or at least you could.
500 or VT500. I don't know. I don't know if they're going to, you know, in the new 500, you're saying, if they're racing that?
Yeah, I'm curious if anybody's racing, like, the new CB500s.
I don't know, because I don't know what class. Is that a single cylinder?
I don't know. I can look.
Or is it a twin? I don't know what class would race in, because I don't really know. I haven't really learned a lot about how they break that down. There's a lot of classes. You can race a lot. I mean, like an SV650 will fit in a ton of classes. But
yeah. Well, I know that, like, there's the newer GS500s, you know, like the 90s on up to now, Suzuki's. Mm-hmm. I know that they have a class that a lot of people racing. Waiting for the internet. Come on, little internet, you can do it. Or not.
Huh. You're dead in the water, huh? See, it was a CB5.
Yeah, I'm actually kind of amazed that it's the 100. You know, like the CB500R or the CB500.
X, right. They are a... Let me see what this thing is. This is one that I'd like to get a test ride on as well,
twin.
Too.
Yeah, it's a twin.
Okay.
So's the Suzuki GS500, and so is the Kawasaki EX500 when it was around still.
I don't know. You know, I know that they race the crap out of any of the older bikes. They definitely find a class for them, so I don't know if they're racing these things or not. I don't know if there's a spec class or anything like that, like there was for the Ninja. And I don't know how that's going to change.
I know that there's a whole racing, like, a whole racing aftermarket scene for the EX500 and the GS500.
Mm-hmm.
And those are all, you know, those all got... I don't know if the GS500 is still being made, but the EX got discontinued in the 2000s, so not that old, you know.
Yeah, and you know, because of the availability of parts and the stuff that's already out there, I think an SV650 would be in my future for track days and for club racing.
Yeah.
Really. I think for me that would be the best bike to learn on and the most affordable way to get into it, not having to spend a ton of money. It was funny because I know I've mentioned this before. A friend of mine's like, oh, you need to get into the thumper class. And he's like turning me on to this guy in Colorado that builds them on Husky motors. They're $18,000, you know, used.
Jeez.
So, if I can spend like $1,500 or $2,000 and get a decent bike for track days. And there's been some guys that have had that I know that stepped up to like new. They bought brand new Aprilias for track days and they were selling their like GSXR 600 that was completely done up. You know, for like $3,000 or $4,000 with a lot of nice work done to it. So there's a lot of affordable bikes. This is really actually a kind of cool looking bike too. This is the CB500X, yeah.
Uh-huh.
I'm looking at the 500X.
I know that my buddy Sean up in Washington was talking about he wanted to get an RC51 for a track bike, and he had a, I think it was first gen SV650 that had a second gen motor in it,
because
mm-hmm. The first gen motor had gotten blown up, and then, mm-hmm. I mean, it had been thrown down the track a couple times and had some zip tie stitches holding some of the fairing together, but it's a track bike, you know, like, we're not going for pretty, we're going for fast.
You know, RC51 has always been one of my favorite motorcycles, but everybody that I know that's had them says, man, they're a handful on the track.
Yeah.
Even this bike, the CBR500R, is a really neat looking bike, too.
Yeah, I see one of those on the way to work pretty regularly, and I really like it. I think
it's hard to judge again looking at these pictures because I don't know the size of these guys. These guys riding them seem really thin, you know?
They're smaller in stature for sure. The bikes are, but they're not like. I think I don't know. I don't know what you know what your suit what you're comfortable on, but I think I'd be comfortable on it.
I don't know. It's one of those things where I'd actually really have to try it. You know.
Mm-hmm.
I've sat on some, like, the Ninja 250 and stuff in the dealership, and they just felt too small for me. This bike here, it's hard to tell by looking at it. You know, and I've ridden smaller motorcycles and had fun on them, but I think when I go to AIM or Biketoberfest, I'll try to get a demo ride on some of these just to kind of see what they're like.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not something that's going to be – and, you know, the Continental GT for that part – for that matter, is not a big bike either. It's small, but I feel really comfortable sitting on that. The seating position on it, even with the clip-ons and their quote-unquote rear sets on there,
mm-hmm.
pretty comfortable on the bike. You know, the 10A's feels like a really the Le Mans is a big bike. It's just you know even with rear sets and clip-ons on there, that's a pretty big bike. I don't know.
Yeah.
These bikes, it's just hard to tell by looking at them for me.
I always forget how small the Bonneville is just because I ride it all the time, you know? Like, it seems like a normal bike, and then I get on somebody else's bike or I see somebody else's bike sitting next to it. I'm like, oh, yeah, the Bonneville's pretty small.
So now you think that's a small bike just in what, height? Because
Yeah, it's definitely small in terms of, like, seat height, and then with the clip-ons and the rear sets, it's definitely, like, got a really narrow stance.
What's the naked version of that? CB500F. That's what it was.
Yeah, the F, yeah.
That bike's only $5,800.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Now, see, looking at this and looking at, again, you're looking at, you know, a couple $1,000 difference, but the way this bike looks compared to the FC07, I certainly like the way the FC07 looks better.
Oh, absolutely.
Than this. Just the styling cues on it, you know? I don't know, lately, Honda, somebody had written when the that latest bike came out, the Goldwing Valkyrie thing.
Yeah.
Somebody had kind of made a post that, you know, that Honda's going for the cutting edge in styling, and that's what they've kind of been known for all along. And when you think about it, they kind of have. When they came out with the Interceptor and all the bikes that followed that in the VFR series, they've always kind of like pushed the envelope when it came to styling on bikes, and they've had some misses and they've had some real hits. So, you know, I guess I've kind of like panned a couple of their bikes recently and said, that thing's ugly, but really they need to have people out there innovating and making stuff look different because there's something for everybody out there, really.
Yeah.
You know, what I think is really ugly, the next guy is going, man, that bike is really cool. Like the CTX, you know, the CTX 1300. I've heard a lot of people. I think Hornberger likes that bike, doesn't he? Didn't he always talk about that thing wanting to be his next bike?
I don't know.
And for me, it's just not, I don't know, it's not me. But, again, I said that about the Diavel when I looked at it, and then when I actually went and saw one in person and rode it, I had a different opinion. So could be the same with the CTX. I just have a hard time with anything that includes your feet out in front of you, you know?
Yeah, me too. The only real experience with Ford controls I've had on like riding anything, I It wasn't very long, but I didn't like it.
Right. Right. We had that.
You know, slightly farther back forward controls would be okay.
Right. You know, we owned a cruiser in the past, and I didn't like that at all. That just wasn't my cup of tea, but I've said that before. You ain't got anything else? Because we're a little past an hour now.
Yeah, I think I'm good. I can't think of anything else. I sent an oil sample. I don't know. I think I've talked before about how I send samples in on the bike, and every time I send one in, they're like, "Hey, you could go longer. You could go longer."
When you remember, just send me the link for where you send that stuff out. The info, please.
Yeah, I'll do it right now.
Okay, because I want to do the same thing.
Yeah, I'm they're super reasonable. I did it on my truck just recently. It's the first sample I think I've ever sent them on my truck. I've got a Dodge Dakota with 160,000 miles on it.
Mm-hmm.
And I was really pleased that they were like, "Yeah, you're from an internal perspective, your engine's running great."
Okay. So because I every time I change oil in the Stelvio, this stuff looks new, which is kind of killing me. That's 17 bucks a liter, you know.
I mean, and I can say from experience that they do actually find things. I mean, one of the times I sent in oil, they said, "Hey, there's a lot of gas in this oil. You probably want to look at something." You know, they gave me some clues for like, here's places to check. Fortunately, I had actually already found the issue and fixed it. But by the time I sent them the oil sample, but you know, they caught it if I hadn't caught it.
I'm just curious to see what the condition of it is, you know. Like I said, it's 6,000 miles. It's looking new. And I'm spending, you know, a ton of money. That oil for that bike's expensive, that 1060. All right.
Okay.
Anything else? You guys know how to get hold of us, right?
Yeah. We are Cafe Racer Podcast pretty much everywhere except for Twitter. We are Cafe Racer Pod. If you like the show and you'd like to, and you think that the show is worth supporting, which we do, then head on over to Patreon, patreon.com/CafeRacerPodcast. Or you can head on over to CafeRacerPodcast.com and click the support the show link. There's a link to the Patreon there. There's a link to the Patreon on the main Cafe Racer Podcast page. So you can find it pretty much.
I just put
everywhere.
A link up on our Facebook page. And if you can't support the show, you can't afford it, we understand. You know, we're looking at 50 cents a show, a dollar a month. If you can't support us, give us a like on Facebook.
That would be awesome. Tell your friends about us. You know, there are plenty of other ways to support the show besides financially. We appreciate everything that you guys do, and we thank you for listening.
Again, thanks a lot. And if you don't have anything else, Crash, we'll sign off.
No, I'm good.
So get out there and ride.